be up, probably be up for a Grammy for Best Album of the Year. We'll see if that actually pans out. My name is Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, Ashley and I will bring you stories along with Brian Lynn. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, Harvard University and the Massachusetts Institute of Technology took legal action Wednesday against the United States government. The schools are seeking to overturn the Trump administration's new rule on international student visas. Under the rule, international students must take at least some of their college classes in person, transfer to U.S.-based schools with in-person classes, or leave the country. They will have to leave even if a health emergency forces their classes online later in the school year. The government will reject visa requests from international students at colleges or universities that only offer classes online. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, the federal law enforcement agency, announced the rule on Monday. The same day, many colleges, including Harvard, said all their classes later this year would be online. MIT joined Harvard to file the legal challenge Wednesday morning in Boston. They asked a federal court to bar ICE from enforcing the new rule. They called for the return of the March 13, 2020 exemption, which permitted international students to attend classes online while retaining their visa during the health emergency. In a statement, Harvard University President Lawrence Bacow wrote, "The order came down without notice, its cruelty surpassed only by its recklessness." He said the new rule was designed to pressure colleges to hold classes in person without regard to concerns for the health and safety of students and others. The rule, Bacow added, comes at a time when the United States has been setting daily records for the number of new infections, with more than 300,000 new cases reported since July 1st. At a White House event on Tuesday, President Donald Trump denounced plans from Harvard and other colleges to hold classes online. "They ought to be ashamed of themselves," he said. "That's called the easy way out." The new rule affects about 5,000 international students at Harvard and nearly 4,000 attending MIT. In all, nearly 400,000 students received the F1 or M1 visa in the 12-month period ending in September 2019. Louis Picard is a second-year doctoral student in experimental physics at Harvard University. The Australian told Reuters that having to leave would completely put a roadblock in my research. He added, "There's essentially no way that the work I am doing can be done remotely. We've already had this big pause on it with the pandemic, and we've just been able to start going back to lab." Aparna Gopalan comes from India. The fourth-year anthropology doctoral student at Harvard said telling students to attend other universities for in-person classes was not realistic. You can't transfer in July. That's not what happens, she said.
Boxes of face coverings, bottles filled with antibacterial agents, and a sign saying, "Please wear a mask," mark the entrance to a recreation center in Yatsushiro City. The building serves as shelter for people who have fled floodwaters in southwestern Japan this week. Inside the building, pieces of cardboard separate sleeping areas for over 200 men, women, and children. Another sign tells those staying there to take their temperature each morning. Such measures show the difficulties Japan is facing as it deals with natural disasters in the time of coronavirus. Japanese officials have been warning local leaders to include coronavirus measures in their disaster preparations. Residents have been urged to seek shelter with friends or family members, if possible, to avoid overcrowding in evacuation centers. Aiko Ishimura, a 78-year-old retiree, learned from neighbors on Monday about evacuation orders. She lives alone and had planned to shelter at home, but she chose to flee with neighbors. For Ishimura, spread of the coronavirus is not a top concern. "We don't have many cases here in the first place. We don't really do the whole mask-wearing thing," she added. However, Ishimura said she keeps a mask in her pocket. Kumamoto Prefecture, where she lives, has had only 49 of Japan's more than 20,000 cases of the disease COVID-19. Those numbers come from the Japanese public broadcaster NHK. That compares with close to 7,000 in Tokyo, where cases are on the rise again among its 14 million residents. Misa Matsuda, a 48-year-old medical worker, knows well about the yearly floods in the area. She also had planned to remain at home, but she got a big surprise Monday when she opened her door. She found river water flowing just a few meters from her home. "I thought there's no way the water would come up here to our house, where it's a bit of a hill," she said. Extreme weather disasters have become increasingly common in Japan recently. Last year, Typhoon Hagibis killed nearly 100 people. That storm struck a year after more than 200 people died in western Japan, in the worst flooding in many years. Matsuda said she was not too concerned about the new coronavirus because basic safety measures were being taken. But she did worry that residents would gather in the shelter to talk, creating the sort of crowded conditions officials say increase infection risk.
Video sharing service TikTok says it is ending operations in Hong Kong after the enactment of a new national security law. The decision by Chinese-owned TikTok comes after other major internet companies announced they had suspended processing any new requests for user data from Hong Kong's government. The companies include Facebook, Microsoft, Google, Twitter, Telegram, and Zoom. They said the suspensions would remain while they study the new law, which took effect last week. The law reduces Hong Kong's self-governing autonomy and makes it easier to punish protesters. There is a punishment of life imprisonment for the crimes of secession, terrorism, and aiding foreign forces. Under the One Country, Two Systems rule, Hong Kong was guaranteed the right to its own social, legal, and political systems for 50 years, following the end of British rule in 1997. Some observers, however, say China's ruling Communist Party has ignored that agreement by forcing the passage of unpopular laws. Critics see the new national security law as an attempt by China to reduce individual rights and freedoms in Hong Kong. The new law gives police powers to control and remove online information if reasonable grounds are found to suspect that the data might violate national security rules. American-based social media services like Facebook and Twitter are generally banned in China. But most have operated freely in Hong Kong. The companies are now considering how to operate under the new national security law. TikTok said in a statement it decided to immediately halt its operations in Hong Kong in light of recent events. The Chinese company ByteDance owns TikTok. The app is hugely popular in the United States and many other countries, especially among young people. TikTok only operates outside of mainland China. But ByteDance runs a similar video sharing service for inside China. Some U.S. officials have raised national security concerns about TikTok. Lawmakers have warned that TikTok could be misusing private data. They have also expressed concerns about laws requiring Chinese companies to support and cooperate with intelligence work controlled by the Chinese Communist Party. U.S. Secretary of State Michael Pompeo said this week that officials were looking at banning some Chinese internet services, including TikTok. When asked whether he would suggest that Americans use TikTok, Pompeo told the broadcaster Fox News, "Only if you want your private information in the hands of the Chinese Communist Party." ByteDance has denied it is influenced by Chinese officials and says it does not provide any user data to the government. Facebook and its messaging app WhatsApp said in a statement on Monday they had stopped processing government requests for user data in Hong Kong. The companies said they were currently examining the new national security law. They added that the process would include human rights due diligence and discussions with international human rights experts. Google, Twitter, Microsoft's LinkedIn, and video conferencing service Zoom also made similar announcements. Mike Ravdonikas is a spokesperson for messaging service Telegram. He told the Associated Press the company had also stopped processing data requests related to its Hong Kong users. Activists in Hong Kong widely used Telegram to help organize pro-democracy protests in the territory. Ravdanikas said the company understands the importance of protecting the right to privacy of our Hong Kong users. He added that the suspension would remain in place until an international consensus is reached in relation to the ongoing political changes in the city. I'm Brian Lin.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we will finish our story about Abraham Lincoln. He led the United States during the Civil War. That conflict lasted from 1861 to 1865. In it, the southern states of the Confederacy battled the northern states of the Union. As a wartime president, Lincoln was known for several things. He was actively involved in plotting the military campaign. When Lincoln was unhappy with the performance of his top generals, he dismissed them. He also greatly increased the power of the presidency, even beyond what the U.S. Constitution permitted. And Lincoln struck at the issue at the heart of the Civil War, slavery. He ordered that enslaved people in the Confederate States be forever free. His order is called the Emancipation Proclamation. Seven months after the Emancipation Proclamation went into effect, the Confederacy and the Union clashed in the bloodiest battle of the Civil War. The army of Confederate General Robert E. Lee was on the offensive. Lee planned to move the fighting out of the South and invade the North. He won a major victory against Union forces at Chancellorsville, Virginia. Then he pushed across Maryland and into Pennsylvania. A Union army, led by General George Meade, met Lee's troops near a small crossroads town called Gettysburg. In the first days of July 1863, a little more than 2 years after the start of the Civil War, Confederate and Union troops each struggled to claim the territory. Both sides suffered massive casualties. But Lee believed Confederate troops were close to winning and that Meade had spread his soldiers thin. So, on the third day of fighting, he ordered a direct attack on Union forces. Lee's soldiers aimed at the center of the Union line, positioned behind stone walls at the top of a ridge, or raised area. Confederates first used cannons to fire artillery at the ridge. Then about 15,000 Confederate soldiers began marching across more than a kilometer of an open field. The Union soldiers behind the walls fired on them. More Union forces attacked the Confederate soldiers on the left and right. In half an hour, three-quarters of the soldiers in the open field had been killed or wounded. Thousands more on each side also died. The surviving Confederate forces quickly withdrew and waited for Meade to attack again. But, much to Lincoln's dissatisfaction, he did not. The following morning, Lee led the survivors back to Virginia. He left behind 28,000 soldiers dead, wounded, or missing, more than one-third of his total army. The Union had suffered 23,000 casualties, almost as many. The Battle of Gettysburg is important in American history for several reasons. One is the large number of killed and wounded soldiers, the largest until World War II in the 20th century. Another reason is because it was a turning point in the war. It ended Lee's invasion of the North and weakened his army permanently. Over the same days, Union troops won another major victory under General Ulysses S. Grant in the southern city of Vicksburg, Mississippi. The battles at Vicksburg and Gettysburg began to turn the conflict to the Union's favor. Finally, the Battle of Gettysburg is almost always linked to a speech Lincoln gave there, known as the Gettysburg Address. It is only about 270 words long, but it is one of the most famous speeches in American history. Lincoln spoke at the opening of a cemetery for all the soldiers who had died at Gettysburg. But he also used the event to speak to the entire country about the war. He said, "The conflict was a test of whether the American form of government could survive, that is, a government of the people, by the people, for the people." He also pointed to the Declaration of Independence as the country's founding document. He said, "The nation had been conceived in liberty," and, he said, "it was dedicated to the idea that all men are created equal." Historians have noted that, in the speech, Lincoln changed the reasoning behind the war effort. It continued to be a struggle to reunite the country. But after the Gettysburg Address, it was also more clearly a struggle to free enslaved people. In 1864, Lincoln won re-election to a second term as president. His new vice president was Senator Andrew Johnson from the southern state of Tennessee. At the swearing-in ceremony, the president spoke about the need for the North and South to come together again peacefully. In that speech, his famous second inaugural, Lincoln called on all Americans to finish the war. He urged them to care for the wounded, the wives and children of soldiers killed in battle, and to seek a just and lasting peace. Most importantly, Lincoln asked Americans to reunite with malice toward none, with charity for all. In other words, with respect and kindness. A few weeks later, the war effectively ended. Lincoln's military plan had worked. He had finally found two generals whom he trusted, Ulysses S. Grant and William T. Sherman. Sherman led a campaign across the southern states. His path through Georgia, from the city of Atlanta to the city of Savannah, was known as Sherman's March to the Sea. The march destroyed farms and houses along the way. The destruction was terrible. It was also effective. The Confederate Army was left with little food or communication. At the same time, Grant surrounded Lee's army in Virginia. Grant cut these Southern troops off from supplies, too. Lee realized he must surrender to Grant, although, he said, he would rather die 1,000 deaths. The two men met on April 9, 1865, at a farmhouse in the town of Appomattox Courthouse, Virginia. Lee famously wore his finest military uniform and sword. Grant famously wore his fighting clothes, still marked with mud. Lee and Grant spoke briefly. Then Grant wrote the terms of surrender. As Lincoln had asked, the terms were respectful and generous. Lee's officers were free to keep their horses and their weapons, and the Union Army would give the Confederate soldiers food. When some Union troops began to play a victory song, Grant told them to stop. "The war is over," he said. "The rebels are our countrymen again." Five days after Lee surrendered, Lincoln and his wife, Mary, went to a theater in Washington, D.C. To put it mildly, the last years had been very difficult for them. While Lincoln was supervising the war effort, both his third and fourth son became sick with typhoid. The younger boy recovered. The older did not. Willie Lincoln died in the White House at age 11. Mary and Abraham Lincoln were crushed. Mary Lincoln blamed herself. She believed God was punishing her. In their own ways, the Lincolns continued to mourn in the years after Willie's death. At one point, Lincoln said he hoped he and Mary could feel happier. He urged them to have some pleasant times together. So, with the war coming to an end, they went to a light-hearted play at Ford's Theater. It was the night of Friday, April 14th, 1865, a day that Christians were marking that year as Good Friday, the anniversary of Jesus' death. The theater was not far from the White House. The Lincolns had seats in a box high above the stage. Toward the end of the performance, a man entered their box and shot Abraham Lincoln in the back of the head. Then the gunman jumped to the stage, breaking his leg as he landed. He called out a Latin expression, "Sic semper tyrannis." It means, "thus always to tyrants." Some observers say the man added, "the South is avenged." The gunman was a Southerner named John Wilkes Booth. He had plotted to kill the president after hearing Lincoln support voting rights for African Americans. Booth briefly escaped, but was later captured and hanged. Lincoln was taken to a nearby boarding house. He seemed lifeless and could hardly breathe. Doctors examined him, but found they could not save him. Lincoln died the following morning. He was 56 years old. The emotions of many Americans changed from joy at the coming end of the Civil War to shock and mourning. Thousands lined up along railroad tracks as Lincoln's body made its way from Washington, D.C., to his home in Illinois. Even many Southerners mourned Lincoln's death. They understood that he would treat them kindly. A little more than 6 weeks after Lincoln's assassination, the last Confederate army surrendered, and the war was considered officially over. The country was reunited, and the process of legally freeing enslaved people had begun. Although these acts are tremendous parts of Lincoln's legacy, in time his public image would grow only larger and more celebrated. As one witness to Lincoln's death reportedly said, "Now he belongs to the ages." I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.